We're all talking about the same thing. We're just using very different languages. The universe is always expanding. This is one way that spirit themselves expand through our experiences here, finding new ways to be and to love, to literally expand love itself. Science often is only comfortable with what is measurable.
It does ripple and change the world if you can be that change you're waiting for.
COVID was a global reckoning for all of us. How have these years since the pandemic changed you? How do we feel changed by these years? What does our spiritual reality have to do with this? And how do these new energies that we're contending with bring us deeper into connection with the self and others and our duty to our broader humanity, to each other as fellow humans on this earth? And how does this knowledge change the spiritual truths that we're chasing in our daily lives? Hey y'all, I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning. Making Meaning is a podcast by the Cohere Collective here to help guide you along your path to make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. This week, I am joined by Angel Reiki Master and medium K. Margaret Solorio, and COVID was a time of grand reckoning for K. Margaret. It was during this time that she had her tower moment. Things came crumbling down. And when she turned to meditation, she discovered this additional layer of reality that was deeper, more vast, more nuanced, more complex, but also what now guides the principles of her life. K. Margaret blends grounded spiritual energy work with practical daily spirituality to help her clients come back home to themselves. What does home mean? We are all mini homes to ourselves, but also the spaces that we inhabit are deeply important. And there's an energy exchange there between our energy and the energy of our home. In this episode, we chat about a lot. Of course, we get into the big meaning and purpose questions like we always do, but we dive into a little bit about Reiki, what angel Reiki training is like, mediumship, and practical daily insights like check-ins and small meditation exercises that can help anyone tap into this energy of wholeness within themselves. Okay. I believe that's all I have before we dive into this episode. So, as always, let's take a deep breath. And get started. Hey, Margaret, thank you so much for joining me today. It is such a pleasure to be sitting down and chatting with you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm very excited to be here.
Absolutely. Well, my very first question that I always ask, just to hopefully set a nice tone for our conversation, is what is one thing you're grateful for?
Oh, so much. So I now use, I call it appreciation, but it's the same thing, as a strategy in my life. Whenever I feel my thoughts going in a not so nice place, it's really easy to go down that hole. And I remember gratitude or appreciation as a strategy. And I just start looking around me and going, wow, isn't that amazing? So I am very, very thankful for a lot. But usually I start with the basics. I love my family. I'm really excited for the house we live in and, you know, the work I get to do, all those wonderful things.
Absolutely. I love that. And I like the framing of appreciation. I think when we hear certain words so many times, they can become desensitized to them. They start to not sound like a word anymore. And I think gratitude and gratitude journaling and a gratitude practice is something that in, you know, the spaces we both operate in, you hear a lot. And I think now I've started to, as beautiful as that is and those practices are, I've started to, you know, okay, well, that's a given. We need to be doing the gratitude practice. So having, you know, just appreciation, it feels like a really beautiful, low stakes way to tap into that same energy. So I really love
that.
Yeah,
and help raise your vibration. And I'm sure we'll talk more about, but in the work I do, it's very important to be aware of how you feel. And it's so fun to start appreciating or showing, feeling that gratitude, and then it just snowballs. And to give yourself the gift of a positive snowball is really
fun. I love that. A positive snowball. So the second question I always ask that will really open up the rest of what we chat about today is, what is your story? I know that's a really big question, but whatever you
so
feel called, right, of course, and the storytellers that we all are as human beings, but whatever you feel called to speak to today, whatever story of yours you would like to share, I'm excited to hear it.
Sure. I think my story that has to do with the energy work I do now, probably a lot of people will resonate with. It started during COVID. So I have always been really good at doing, getting a lot of things done. And I grew up with the kind of conditioning that it was all on me to make sure everybody else was okay. So wonderful people pleaser and a sacrificer of myself in with good intention, right? Of having everything going well. And so I used to wake up in the morning and lay in bed and just feel like I put armor on, and that I was racing against time, and it was me against the world and me against time. And how can I get all these things done and do everything for everyone? And everyone's going to be safe and okay and happy if I get all this done. And it always felt like such a struggle. And then COVID happened, and what felt like this horizontal run got flipped on its axis and was now vertical and everything at the same time. And I couldn't keep up, obviously. So it all came crashing down around my head, metaphorically speaking. And I kind of came to a reckoning point where I couldn't do my way out of the problem. So I had to say, well, you can either keep feeling badly for yourself and act like you're dying because you're just kind of giving up, or let's see what else is out there because you are living. What can I do to change this? So that kind of slowly started me down. I started listening to different things and I started meditating. And when I first meditated, I would have to set a timer for 1 minute. And it was really painful to sit with my own thoughts, because when you're doing and doing and doing, and you're not taking a couple seconds to intentionally switch your energy or change your task or segment of the day. Mm-hmm. You kind of lose a little bit here and there. You end up splitting your energy. So at the end of the day, you feel frazzled and it's hard to sit with that. And I wasn't experienced in it. So I just went really slowly. I went from silence to tonal music and slowly increased till I could get to maybe 20 minutes a day. And what I learned then, so I started meditating daily and I would have good experiences where I could then get to that inner peace state where you can receive information. And after a few years, my hands would heat up after the meditation. And so I looked that up because I didn't know what it was and realized that's a sign of being an energy healer. So then I started following others and learning about energy healing and found a teacher I wanted to study with. And I became an angel Reiki master and studied that. And there I learned that meditation is a tool. I was very not so happy to learn that, but it really is true. The point of meditation is a tool to get you to that state. And once you understand what that feeling is inside your own body, you can get there whenever you want. And that's what's used to connect with spirit and channel energy as a Reiki master. Or the program I did, Angel Reiki, was this dual program of mediumship and Reiki energy. So to open up to the mediumship and be a channel, it's the same idea. You have to raise your vibration and allow for that receiving. So it helped me meet my spirit guides and connect to my intuition. And I loved the gift of knowing you didn't have to. I was so attached to my meditation practice of I do it at this first thing in the morning and this certain way in this certain place with this certain music. And when I realized that was me just trying to do it again and not be, it was a big gift. And so now I know no matter where I am, I can stop and tune in and can reestablish that connection with the life force, with source, spirit, God, whichever word you want to use. So it was then, so I worked with people and doing a Reiki energy healing. And then beginning of this year, actually, I got called to do work on spaces. It just kind of came to me. It always had been, the more I do it, the more I realize how much I've always enjoyed it. We moved a lot growing up. more times than I can count. And so that I used to complain about it a lot, but now I see it as a gift. I had this chance to see all these different spaces and live in different spaces. And I always felt that energy. And now I see there's use in that information. So I now use similarly to how I worked with people's bodies. I move through and clear the energy in spaces, usually homes.
That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think you're 100% right that a bunch of people can relate to this feeling of COVID being a reckoning, right? I actually just learned this morning, I'm a big etymology and language nerd, and I just learned this morning that the Greek root of apocalypse actually means revealing.
Oh.
And I just loved that. And I think that for so many of us, COVID felt like such an apocalypse, and that it was like literally the world as we knew it ended. But so much about our truth and who we were and who we are and who we actually want to be was revealed. And it was in these spiritual communities, a moment of like a mass tuning in to this kind of work and this reality that, you know, so many of us feel. And I think a lot of that does come with this slowing down, right? You know, most of us have heard the saying that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, not human beings having a spiritual experience. But when we're doing the human part really, really quickly, it's easy to forget the spiritual nature of that. And I love the language that you used around doing, that you were a doer and you would just do to get through it. And COVID, I think, was one of those times that almost prevented us from doing, because quite literally we couldn't do anything. And it was absolutely a moment of there's no control. You have to let go and just go along for the ride. What was it that made you first want to try meditation? I know that you said, I need to do something, right? I can either sit and stew and stay in this place or do something. Why meditation? I would imagine there's a lot of different things that could have come up.
That's a good point. I first did mindset work, and I came across, I was listening to I love podcasts. Oh, I was listening to other podcasts. And I think I was actually listening to like a life coach kind of her podcast. And a few times she referenced Abraham Hicks. Are you familiar with him?
Esther
Hicks. No, Esther Hicks is a channel. So who she channels is she calls Abraham Hicks because it's kind of this co-creation of her and the spirit channeling through her. And they mentioned it a couple different times in conversation as if the community with which this life coach had built, that was an obvious thing. And I was like, I have no clue who this is. What is this? So I went and looked it up and I started listening to some of her sessions. She's been doing it for 40 years, if not more.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of content out there and it really resonated. And I once heard an interview of her and she talked about how she started. And she talked about meditation. And I thought, well, that's awesome. And I would love to better understand that. And it even if it wasn't the channeling, she was such a proponent of meditation itself that I said, well, that's what I said. I'm going to make the end of my work day. I'm going to make a little time before I jump into the next thing. And I'm going to try meditating.
I love that. Were you spiritually predisposed before this moment of reckoning for yourself? Because I think a lot of us, you know, are raised in different religions and grow into it or out of it and have different experiences. But was that something that you had always been interested in, or was this a new spark?
I think a little bit of both. I think I was spiritually inclined. Whenever it had come up, I was always interested in learning more. I was very limited. My parents weren't religious. My grandparents were. So we once in a while went to church. When I was in college, I sought it out, and Christianity was the religion, major religion where I was studying. And so I got a Bible study teacher and joined a group and all of that. And I found some of what I was looking for. But I'm a trained scientist by schooling and always been the very practical doer kind of person, responsible person in my circles. So it, I think from the outside, and maybe still a little bit right now, I feel like I'm straddling it, got one foot in each world. Seems like a 180 to go from this very masculine energy of doing something in logic and strategy to more feminine energy of intuition and allowing and figuring it out and being open to that, what do they call, the woo-woo kind of stuff. So I was always interested. I never studied it. I never took it seriously. And once this world started opening up to me, I couldn't help. I've read books by mediums, and I've learned things, you know, I've taken crystal courses, and it was more, I think we probably all do that. When you have your own problem to solve, whether it's somebody in your family you want to help or you yourself, you're finally open enough to willing to try anything.
Hmm.
And I think I was finally at that point where I was like, well, it can't really get worse. You know, like from the outside, right. My life looked great, but I felt terrible. So I was like, I can't feel any worse. So why not? If it doesn't work, then fine. If I think somebody thinks I'm crazy, then well, fine. Let's see what happens. And so yeah. If I was called to it, I would read and research and try it and see what resonated for me. And I always encourage anyone to do that. Just throw anything at it, see what works, because we're all different.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and everything is such a steering too, right? And different things will resonate for different people. And even in this kind of, I think of it as a false dichotomy between science and the numinous, this kind of spiritual realm, because the more and more that I learn about science, and I kind of have a pet interest in quantum physics, and the more that you dig into the mysteries there and the explanatory gap between particles and waves, the more that I see parallels to the way that we understand crystal energy and the way that we understand Reiki healing and all of these beautiful things that feel like magic, because that's the word that we use to describe these things that are unexplainable. And yet there's so many things that we still don't have answers to that scientists can kind of wave away and say, well, we just won't think about it. But science is very good at describing things, not explaining the why things work the way they do. And that's, I think, why so many of us turn to this, the spiritual, because it is, okay, sure, gravity's here, but why? Okay, sure, I'm here, but why?
Hey everyone, Reese just hopping in to briefly interrupt this conversation to ask you what you think. Have you experienced a Reiki session before, or are you curious to try one out? Let me know in the comments down below. Also, if you are enjoying this conversation, please give it a like, a 5-star rating, or a review wherever you may be listening or watching, and subscribe. Follow the Cohere Collective and Making Meaning. This is the best way to, one, stay up to date on everything we're doing, but also to support the Cohere Collective and the Making Meaning podcast so we can keep bringing you coherent content. And I want to briefly shout out Matt at Culture Capture over on TikTok, who commented on a clip from my most recent conversation on Making Meaning with Elspeth Hay, and he said that he found the topic really fascinating, and he thinks we need a solar punk future. And I had never heard the term solar punk before, but I love that, and I agree. Let's get solar punk with our future. If you want to be featured in a future episode of Making Meaning, make sure you follow the Cohere Collective across social media, drop your thoughts down below, and let me know your thoughts across everything. And maybe you'll hear your comment. Okay, back to the conversation.
As a trained scientist, how do you reckon these two? Like I said, for me, I find it to be a false dichotomy, and I could talk on the parallels between the different avenues for ages and ages, but I would love to hear your 2 cents on that.
Well, I agree with you. The more I learn, the more it seems the same. So it's almost, for me, I imagine it like looking at a gemstone or a cut diamond, where it's all, they're different facets of this. We're all talking about the same thing. We're just using very different languages. And I mm-hmm. agree. Science often is only comfortable with what is measurable. And our technology maybe is not up to speed with measuring thus that we cannot see. We're getting there. There's lots of subatomic particle things going on and research on different psychic mediums and the brain energy waves and things. But this connection of like getting past our old paradigms, you know, if even if you think of like Jane Goodall's work, right, when she started, mm-hmm. animals were the other and there was no way they could have any sense of intelligence. Or, you know, my favorite is the trees. You know, once I learned the trees talk to each other, I was like, what?
Right.
Every time I go outside, I think, oh, okay, who are you in family with? Because like, who's close enough for you to talk to? It's just, you opened your eyes to these new levels and life is so complex. But I think even that was one of my favorite parts when I was studying that I love questions. My poor teachers, they once gave me a most inquisitive award to stymie me. But I would always get to that point where they couldn't answer the question because of that. I mean, even if you think of doctors who do such wonderful things, they're trained in all these complexities of the physical. But we have the body and the mind and the soul. There are these three components that come together that each affect each other and are reflections of each other and help each other. So I always felt that way. Now I'm going off on a little tangent, but I always felt that way about vitamins when I was in school too. I always loved the nutrition piece of, I studied biotechnology and how that affects a lot. But the things we know about vitamins, you know, I grew up in the age where at the risk of totally dating myself, one thing was the savior, you know, like fat was bad, end of story, like no discussion, everything zero fat, or vitamin C is the best for your immune system, end of story. Here are the things that have vitamin C. Make sure you actually also take vitamins of only vitamin C. No context of, great, here is how vitamin C works in your body in conjunction with these other things, or the reason it's in oranges is because you also need fiber. You know, like, you know, the world's more complex than one thing. So one thing can't be the answer, but we only know about one thing. So we tout that as the end all be all. So long story, not so short. I agree. It's fun to that context that it's almost like, you know, in the world, there are all these wonderful ancient civilizations all over the world. We all kind of got there. to where we are. We just went about it a little bit differently. We all had math in different parts of the world. So we all have science in different parts of the world. We all had some sort of intuitive shaman in the tribe too. They're all these different parts that fit together that are all part of the human experience.
Right. I think it's interesting when I have these conversations because oftentimes I go back to history and I'm like, how did we turn away from so much of this sacred, intuitive, numinous knowledge? And I think we could, you know, tell a lot of stories about the age of information and the Industrial Revolution and the age of technology and all of these great things. But even throughout that, we see Christianity and, other religions stay very prevalent in the West, but those religions certainly talk about the spiritual in a different sense than I think the conversation that we're kind of having around this more interconnected feeling between us and the physical world and maybe the metaphysical world. Do you have a story that you tell or that you're exploring about how the West has kind of gotten to where we are and why some of this ancient wisdom is now that's being rediscovered and readopted and practiced and learned from indigenous communities all around the world? But do you have any insight, thoughts, exploration there?
Yeah, well, what comes up to mind for me is in my studies of energy and becoming an energy healer, we learned about the difference between the ego and the intuition, and egoic thoughts and intuitive thoughts. And when you learn to sense, feel the energy, the egoic thoughts, at the risk of physically, it's not obviously physically, but it feels heavier, denser energy than the intuitive thoughts, which come through, which feel light and airy. So you get to learn to discern between these thoughts so that when your ego tries to bombard your session, you know, you can kind of say, thank you, no, goodbye. And you can receive the information through the channeling. that I feel like kind of speaks to our lack of the current, what feels like a little bit of current lack of respect for energetic patterns. I was actually having a conversation with somebody recently about that, how it's fascinating to speak with somebody who does study history because history repeats itself. I was actually speaking to an astrologer, and she was talking about how the pattern, you can speak to astrologers who go back and could say, yes, this event happened 6,000 years ago and 2,000 years ago and 500 years ago. And here are the things that happened in humanity after it. Like, there are patterns that go with us. And if you are open enough to receive that and co-create with it, there's opportunity. Where I think a lot of times our ego gets in the way and we say, well, this is my lifetime now. Things are different now. I have to deal with what is now. That doesn't matter. And I would say you also reminded me of a lot of the conversations I have with my kids, where that became a lot more apparent as I became a parent. They grew up and I could have these conversations with them, because they'll do something and I'll just very clearly say, well, no, because I have a different vantage point. And they'll just dismiss me right away. And so then we'll have to have a conversation. Sometimes, obviously, not every time, but I'll just say, you know what? Here's where I'm coming from. Here's what my mother learned. Here's what I learned. And here's what I'm trying to teach you. And then they'll step back and go, oh, that does have context and is relevant to what I'm doing. Like, yes, that's why I tried to tell you. It's useful information. But at face value, your ego kind of goes, no, I got it. Or that's not right. relevant in this time. And so I feel like sometimes, culturally, we do that, you know, like civilizations have come and gone and exploited their resources. So yes, we should learn that you last longer if you work in conjunction with the earth, but somehow right. it's easy to ignore that. And we think, no, I'm different. You know, it's
right.
It's hard to, it's this combination of finding your value within and not having to have that I think for me too, that external validation. Because if you know that value is innate, there's no desire. You can stay in your own lane. You're not trying to control anyone or anything. You can see the reflection of spirit. It's my preferred term for universe, source, God. You can see that energy thread, that spirit through everything. Everything is energy. And then when you see it in everything, you realize, oh, we're not all that different. You know, the tree has the same energy as I do. I mean, we're not the same beings. We're not having the same experience of life expectancy or things like that. But we do have a through line. And so that really, for me, has changed my perspective in terms of where I fit in the grand scheme of things and how I can have right. impact. And that also helped teach me, what was it, what Gandhi always said, like, if you want to change the world, start I'm not going to quote it right. It's out of my head. But do you know what I'm trying to say?
Is it be the change you wish to see in the world? Be the change you
wish to see in the world. It used to drive me nuts because I used to always think little old me is going to change the world by what I do. Makes no sense. And now that I see all those threads of energy, like, oh, wait a second, ripple effects. If I choose to lead and be a lighthouse and be kind and shine my light and put value on spending quality time with the people I love, or put value and giving that attention, or I put value on making time to take care of myself or spending time on the things I enjoy, in reflection, they will do the same. And they will go out in the people I love and live with. They will go out in the world and treat others and have that expectation. So it does ripple and change the world if you can be that change you're waiting for.
I love that. It really makes me think of the, you know, to heal your family, you heal yourself. Heal your family, you heal the world, kind of thing.
Oh,
that you
nice.
Hear sometimes. But it also made me think about this in context of these big overarching patterns that we see throughout thousands and thousands of years. The humans make plans and God laughs. I am also like, humans make plan and astrology laughs, or humans make plans and Reiki laughs, right? Because it's unless they're made in conjunction with, in co-creation with, it is very much like we can't stop a tsunami from coming. You know, there are these patterns and the force of nature that exists that it is just so much easier to swim with the current, and the current is actually wanting to take you to the end of the river anyways.
Amen.
Let it take you. I love that. That's such a beautiful reminder. I did want to ask in the very beginning, when you were discussing your story, you were talking about really getting in touch with being able to know how you feel. And in the middle of what you were just talking about, you're talking about being able to distinguish between intuition and the ego. And one thing I see a lot of conversation around that some days I'm good at and some days I'm bad at is telling the difference between intuition and anxiety, right? Which I think anxiety is, of course, very ego-based because it comes from that fear of ego death largely and insecurities that can exist within that. For you, you described the ego as this heavier feeling and intuition as this lighter, airier feeling. But I think even distinguishing between that can be difficult sometimes, especially if we're not taking the slow. How would you recommend someone practice that, hone that skill?
Really good question. For me, I think what helped is having a notebook out. So when we pray, we ask. So the asking mode and the receiving mode is different. And when I started, it was easiest for me to think about praying as asking and meditation is receiving the answer.
Mm.
There are different ways to do that, but you kind of get the flow of energy that way. So if you can get yourself to that wonderfully peaceful, we all experience it a little bit differently, state within meditation where you've raised your vibration and your thoughts are kind of calmed down and hanging out. You can ask a question and then you wait and you receive the answer. And the answer comes very, very quickly, almost instantly. And it feels like a whisper and I need to write it down right away. Because if I don't write it down, my ego jumps in and starts arguing. And then my son and I call them thought bubbles, like, you know, bubble in the air, it pops and then it's gone. So then I lose the answer and I've lost it. So if I write it down, then later I can kind of read back through and absorb the information. So for me, that was easiest, starting to use meditation, not just as a tool to achieve that higher vibration or to relax or to calm down, but to use it as an active practice to ask a question and then wait and receive the answer. Now, when you start, maybe you don't get the answer right away in your session. Maybe it takes a few days or a couple of weeks. Sometimes you might ask a question and like ask for a sign from the angels and that can take a little time for them to coordinate. But if you're asking a question, I'm trying to think. I often ask questions about my creativity, things I'm working on, like, oh, how can I do this? And then it'll start jotting and get the answer and go back through it. So I think working it like a muscle and building it up allows for you to understand how it feels in your body to be in that receiving mode. And then giving yourself grace. We're all human. It takes a lot of practice, I would think, to get with the program all the time. I'll get hints from my intuition and find myself arguing and go, wait, that means it's the real thing. Stop arguing with yourself.
Right. Well, and like you said, to get into the peaceful state and feel it in your body too. I think.
Yes, I feel that detachment from my arms.
Yes. One big shift that I've been making recently in my own meditation practice is not just, you know, listening and it's like, well, that thought feels restrictive, but this one feels expansive, you know, is kind of the paradigm that I think in sometimes. But I'll also think, well, where is this landing? Do I feel it in my heart? Do I feel it in my gut? Do I feel it? Like, what part of my body is activated right now? Does it feel like a black cloud in my head? Does it feel like a tightening in my gut? Does it feel like an emptiness that's like a vacuum? Or does it feel like an emptiness that is like peace and calm? And I think that's been really helpful for me too in this, you know, kind of almost chakra point identification.
Yeah, that's really nice. I'm in my head a lot. For me, it all often feels like thoughts. And the ego is just pushy. Anytime it's anything with a negative twist on it or like heavy-handed, like, wait a second. you know, spirit is all loving, unconditionally loving. So I've learned what unconditional love is from growing my relationship with spirit. And so there's nothing but kind, positive thoughts coming through on that side.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that is a pretty good litmus test. If it's not kind, if it's shaming at all, it's like, that's not source.
No.
Yeah. I want to go back to something else you said earlier when you were talking about your story. And you said that you realized at one point as you were practicing your meditation and getting more involved in this work and learning and reading and all of these beautiful things, that you realized that you were starting to do your meditation again as opposed to practicing, right? Achieving this state of being. Talk to me a little bit about that realization and how you keep yourself from reverting back to this state of doing, even in the spiritual world. Because I find one thing that I notice a lot in spiritual communities and even in like the self-care and self-help kind of communities, and certainly there's an overlap there, is that there's a very much like I mentioned earlier with gratitude, like, well, you have to do your gratitude journal and you have to drink your 8 glasses of water and then you have to do your bubble bath and your face mask and then you have to meditate and then you have to journal. And it's like, okay, when did self-care become... Right. When did self-care become another thing that we had to like stress ourselves out over and shame ourselves with? And I find myself doing that all the time if I don't stop, slow down, and just be. So talk to me about that experience for you, realizing that, breaking out of that, the same old rush, even with this new spiritual language, and how you maintain. And of course, nobody's perfect with their practice.
No, it's a constant work in progress. My favorite reminders, and I'll get back more to how the trigger that usually does stop me, but my favorite reminders are always, time is squishy. So life is what we experience. I have to remind myself that so time is a human construct, and we are taught it's linear. There are these blocks, there are these phases, and that structure really easily for me kind of takes over my mind and my day and how I measure my value. And so I have to remind myself, time is squishy. Sometimes you're having a great time and 5 hours feels like 5 minutes. Sometimes you're having a terrible time and 1 minute feels like 40. So it's how you experience that time, that what kind of vibe you're at, frequency you're working on, that really changes how much you can get done or how it feels or what the outcome is, what the result is. How you are, how you be is so much more important in the end of the day. So that being said, for me, the not so gentle reminder usually comes through when I realize it's become a bit of an addiction. So let's say I have my routine and one day I don't get to do my routine. And then I start shaming myself and going, oh, well, you didn't do that. So now you're going to have a terrible day. Good luck. And I'm like, then I stop and go, wait a second. I've been meditating for years now. You really think I can't, this is me arguing with my ego. You know, you really right. think I can't handle another day? You know, I think I know other ways to find that peace and calm, even if I can't fit in 10, 15 minutes before my day gets going and everyone else wakes up in the house. It's going to be okay. So when I have those like knee-jerk reactions, like, oh, I didn't get to do this, so the world's going to end kind of feeling, then I know I've gotten a little too attached to my tools and missed the point that it's not what I'm doing. It's how I'm doing it. Am I taking a minute when I, you know, change segments of my day. Like before we started this together, I took a few minutes and I closed my eyes and I prayed or meditated, however you want to say that, and got into the like the right place. I want to give my full attention and provide value. So I did that with intention instead of just going, oh, I'm doing this. Now I'm going to do this. Now I'm going to do this. And feeling like my energy is split and I leave a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit there. So I think understanding that how you're approaching something, you're doing it with intention, whether or not you've got tools to do it. I'm all in all the work I do, I'm all about little little changes that you can make that can have a big impact. Mm-hmm. And also not feeling like anyone has to do anything to achieve the wellness they desire, because you are it.
Right,
you
know, right.
You're the magnet that draws in everything to your life. You're the one who sets the tone. You're the light that's shining. You've got everything you need. All of this stuff is just supportive. Great. Let's use that as a tool to your benefit. I'm there to amplify what you're doing. But at the end of the day, you be you, and that's perfect.
I love that. I think one thing that I've really come to in my own work with other people, especially because, of course, I'm predisposed to meditation and journaling, and I read tarot and some of these more, for lack of a better term, woo-woo practices, the new age that's actually a little bit more old age. But so many people I come across that are like, I don't believe in this crystals thing. I don't believe in the tarot thing. I don't know about that. And I'm like, fine. We don't need that to do what I love about it, mm-hmm. right? What's the entry point for you, for whoever the specific person is, right? So I love that. And of course, I love nerding out about the specific tools that I love that resonate with me, but that the juice is that the light, like you were talking about, that's within all of us. And I think when anyone gets quiet and still, you can feel that spark. And it's like that is what we're trying to tap into. So I love that. And with that spark, I suppose let's get into the Reiki and mediumship piece. Of course, we are going to get to it eventually. And I feel like this is a good entree into it. I didn't know that you trained those at the same time. So one, maybe just a brief primer on Reiki and mediumship in your words, in your language, would be great. And what you love about it and how it allows you to tap into this spark that we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, there are so many wonderful questions in that one question. So Reiki energy healing is an ancient practice that has very specific, they call it laying of the hands. So hand positions that you put across the body. We work mostly with the seven major energy centers or chakras in the body. There are hundreds of energy centers in the body, but these main ones, kind of your energy flows through and filters and clearing those. And I always thought of them as like a wheel, like a water wheel for the energy. And so if the water wheel is stuck, the energy wheel is stuck, then that can, you feel that stuck energy in different ways throughout your life, or maybe physically in your body. And so clearing that out regularly and keeping everything flowing can really help lift up and make space for new opportunities or clarity or insight. And can be helpful also literally in healing. If there's something, whether it's, for me, it came across less as a, like a trauma. I didn't usually deal with that. It was more old paradigms. Like the people I worked with were stepping into a new line of work and were unsure about something or had stepped into that new line of work and were feeling like they were stuck. So it was kind of getting that energy flowing. Now, the training I did combine mediumship. And so there was a less, Reiki is traditionally a silent practice. So if you go for a session, then the healer doesn't speak the whole time and goes through the motions. And in any kind of energy healing you ever do as a recipient, I just want everyone to be aware, the healer is not doing the healing. The healer is the channel. So because we have studied how to open ourselves and to reach and hold a higher vibration, we can allow that higher vibration to go through us, and you heal you with that. It's almost like like a tuning fork. Like I'm holding the tuning fork and you're then tuning up, so that you've got that higher vibration. And in that higher vibration, the lower vibrations in your body cannot sustain, and they filter out, weed out, release, however you want to think of that. And so angel Reiki you also learn to connect with the angels and then sometimes loved ones on the other side. And so that was talking about the energy centers as portals and how that connects. And also, so it's not a silent practice because when messages come through from the other side, they're not, if I'm the channel, they're not for me, they're for whoever's receiving. So it makes no sense to me. I say what comes through, you validate. I often find it like a tap, like message comes through. If you don't validate, we have to figure that one out. Once we figure it out, how it fits, then more messages come through. Mm. So it was getting a connection to kind of the meaning in the different energy centers and then how that related. So for example, the third eye can often have to do with your day-to-day. And so does Archangel Michael, who's also known for protection. So often when I got to the third eye, I'm a very visual person. In my mind's eye, I'd see some sort of blue, whether it was water or something that would give me a clue to the feeling or the structure of the person's day or something that was going on. And so I would speak to the symbols I was seeing. Do you ever read The Golden Compass?
No. But it's sitting on my bookshelf behind me, but I haven't opened it
when
yet.
I was younger. She has this tool where she has to fit the three symbols together. Anyway, so that's kind of what it feels like to me, where you kind of, I see these different symbols that have meaning to me. And so that's the language they're communicating through. And then I say the meaning to me and that resonates in a different way for the person receiving.
That's so beautiful. I love that the compass language around symbols, because symbols is something that I say recently within the last like 9 months has really come into my practice a lot. And it's been so clarifying for so many things that it's like when you're at that place where it's like, I know that I don't need a sign, but I'd like a sign.
Always,
like I'd like something.
I love asking for signs and receiving
right?
them.
Right. And then, but it was, I had such a hard time like not deciding, but being clear about what that was. And when I started realizing that I had certain symbols that really were meaningful about this certain thing to me, the signs became so clear. And I was like, okay, now that I told you what language I'm speaking, you can speak that language and we have the same vocabulary and that makes so much sense.
Sorry to interrupt. That's one of my absolute favorite things. It's really unique. So again, when I first became a medium, I wanted to do my way into being a good one. So I read about all the different mediums. I'm like, okay, what's the language that I need to learn? What are the symbols I need to memorize? No, that's not how it works. Spirit uses what you know. So I remember once I read a medium and she said for her, the giraffe was a symbol for strength. I was like, oh yeah, that I wouldn't get that one.
Yeah.
That's not,
not for me, but cool.
But it's also encouraging because the more I study about any topic, it then can come into play in a session.
Right.
Fascinating.
Yes. And which ones stick and resonate and which ones don't. I wanted tie in this beautiful conversation about Reiki and mediumship. I love the combination too. I think that's really unique. And thinking of the chakras as portals is really powerful. But, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the intersection between science and spirituality and how people may not resonate with the tools that we're discussing, but still have everyone's on a spiritual journey, whether they call it their spiritual journey or not. And being a trained scientist, and also you mentioned you were a mom, as you were coming into these gifts, identifying with being an energy healer and having this awakening for yourself, what was it like describing these experiences to the people in your life? Was there like a moment of, I'm gonna have to convince people that this is real, I'm gonna have to talk to people about this? And now with coworkers or ex-coworkers and things, or even clients that you have come in, how do you navigate the skepticism, I suppose?
I don't take it personally. I think one thing this experience and work has taught me is it's given me more confidence, it's given me more trust, and it's given me more faith. And so I know it's not for everybody. Everyone's, like you said, everyone is on their own journey. And maybe they're not at the point I'm at, or maybe they're not even close. So me telling them how it is, not helpful. I think it's, if anyone goes and looks up Abraham Hicks, they often say you have to be ready to be ready. So it often feels like that. I know I feel so much better. I'm such a calmer person. I'm so much a happier person. But I know more answers. So when something difficult does come up that's spiritually related, and there are people in my life who, that's usually the only time when it comes up for somebody who's not regularly into it. My kids think it's awesome. They ask questions all the time.
I love that.
Oh, I love it so much. I don't know if it's because they are kids and they're closer to the beginning and spirit, or if they're just wonderfully loving, supporting human beings, which I'll take that too.
Right.
So they think it's cool and they find reassurance because now I have a bigger perspective on how life works, what the purpose of life is, what happens when you die, all these like you were saying, we're as humans, we seek that why. We seek that why. And kids do that so openly all the time. And so now I actually can add to the conversation, whereas before I had nothing to add. So it starts conversations and it always ends so positively with them. With other people I know, I just, my word right now is lighthouse. I aim to be the lighthouse. Mm. And then if it comes up, I let it come to me. I trust that spirit will give me that nudge if it's the right person. You know, spirit is so amazing at meeting you where you are when you are. And I've seen that over and over and over again in sessions, that I can trust that, you know what, if it's not a right time for me to bring up that I do this too, I don't lose anything by not telling you. So I don't worry about it. If it is something that could be helpful, great. Spirit, give me the nudge and I'll open my mouth. And I don't feel, how do I say that? For a kid who got made fun of a lot, I no longer worry about that. You don't really care what you think.
Yeah.
You know, I finally got to that place where I'm like, you know what? Life is better like this for me. I can do a lot more to help people. I walk better through the world. I enjoy it more. So if you think I'm weird, then awesome. I'm happy to respect your opinion. And if you have any questions, let me know.
Yeah.
It's more of that kind of attitude, which is probably better for everybody around me anyway.
Absolutely. Well, and I love that even being able to discuss it with people is part of your practice in a sense too, that it's like, you know, when I feel a nudge to bring it up, I trust that. And if it doesn't feel right or appropriate, then cool. Like, not everyone needs to be indoctrinated into this specific tool set or into this specific language.
Forgive me for interrupting. With any topic, whether it's spiritual or something else you teach, there are so many teachers who teach the same thing, but we all say it in a little bit different way. So I also understand that even if I'm not the right teacher for that person, surely in their walk through this life, they'll come across someone who says it in a way that makes sense to them. Just like I took a while to find the teacher that worked for me, that the message will get where it needs to go.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it really does go back to that ultimate trust of all of spirit, source, right? All of the beautiful different words we could use to describe it. Talking about these big questions and the questions that your kids have, especially being a medium, I don't know if you necessarily identify with that title. Titles can be interesting in this work too, but talk to me about what happens after we die.
Oh, well, simple answers. We go back home. So we are, if it's spirit, and not just we have our own spirit, but I think of us as like branches off of spirit. It's themselves, kind of this collective consciousness, cosmos. It was hard to define something that's undefinable. And that Earth is a school of love where we come to learn. And Earth is, not Earth, the universe is always expanding. So this is one way that spirit themselves expand through our experiences here, finding new ways to be and to love, to literally expand love itself. So we have our higher self. Everything doesn't come into this one body. It's kind of like a piece of spirit is in each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so when this lifetime is done and our bodies do die, we then go back and rejoin the collective, so to speak, the larger spirit. And from that, we can tap in to all knowledge. And it's all wonderfully positive. We can learn about what we learned about here. We can learn anything we want. And when we're ready, we can come back. My son always gets excited. He used to have this huge fear of death. And now that I'm able to talk about it, he says, oh yeah, it's going to be great. Next time I'm going to be a peregrine falcon and I'm going to be soaring. It's like, he's got a list. It was like, this is what I'm doing
that
next.
That is the coolest thing in the world. Oh my gosh. What a beautiful, like, reframe for him too, because I'm extremely anxious by nature, and as a kid there were so many fears that I think my parents did a good job of, if they didn't know, at least not making up something, which I think a lot of parents do to try and offer that comfort, and they at least were like, you know, we really don't know what happens with certain things. And when you hear your parents say they don't know, it's like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And so for him to have this new outlook that is, and I'm going to be able to soar in the next life.
Yeah, you're not alone. You know, that there's family waiting for you, but also that you're part of a soul family. So you're here supported and you're there supported. I think that was one of the biggest lessons for me. I used to feel so alone because nobody can actually get into your head. You know, even if you have loved ones, nobody actually knows all the gazillion and 50 things you think every day. So,
right,
you can easily remind yourself how isolated you are, or, you know, in your thoughts, and kind of get lost in that. And I used to get lost in that all the time. And now that I have this connection where anytime I can tap in and ask my spirit guide a question, or ask the angels a question, or know they're there, ask for a sign and see it and get that validation, it's so cool walking through the world knowing you're not alone. Yeah. But then also, like, the soul families and this, that you don't die, you know, you never end. It's just this bigger journey that we can't even totally fathom.
Right. So, of course, I know this question is a little unfair. So answer however makes the most sense
questions
for you. But with one thing that I sometimes struggle to reconcile is experiences with specific ancestors or with specific entities, while also holding this belief that we are all one. We are all, Jorge Luis Borges calls it, fingertips of God's consciousness, which I just really love, which sounds a lot like what you were describing. And holding this belief that, because I really resonate with everything you said in terms of my belief system as well, but I'm like, okay, so I had this ancestor and I know that they passed, so they returned to source, but also they're still incarnate in a specific sense that I can tap into. How do you, what do you make of that in this way that the afterlife, the ongoing of life in the next form is both a return to something wholer than ourselves, but also it seems like us in this life still have experiences with individual fragments of consciousness too.
I don't know that I totally understand the question, but I'm going to give it a go.
Okay.
I sometimes think of it as levels. Our soul has a beautiful journey that there are lessons to learn to grow. And I believe that before we choose, and I believe we choose to come at the time and place and family that we came into for specific lessons for this lifetime. And you might not learn all those. That's the goal, but it's okay if you don't, you learn something on the way, even if you don't learn at all. And then you have a choice to come back and learn more. But you also grow yourself as your soul. And we all, just like we each have our own journey here on Earth, we each have our own soul journey, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so that evolution is happening in different ways at different rates. So although there are like generational traumas and patterns that come through that affect us, that we can become aware of and break and change, it's often an accepted part of this process, because this unconditional loving spirit is helping us get what we want the fastest way we could. And sometimes the short distance between two points is a straight line. Well, sometimes that straight line is through the woods, and that's not the easiest way, but it's the shortest way. And you learn what you're there to learn that will help you grow and be who you are.
I love that. I really, really do. And I think, I mean, along the lines of some of the other things we've been talking about with, you know, doing spirituality as opposed to being in presence, not everything is sunshine and rainbows, even once you've tapped into this relationship with spirit or source, or have the signs that come through and you can get validation. Some of the hardest moments of my life have been the depths of the woods, but it's like you still need to experience that to have that wholeness of the experience. And I love what you said. A lot of people will say it's earth school, but I love that you said it's love school.
Yeah,
but it's here, school on earth.
Here on earth. And I think the next level of that is getting to a place where you can not take the contrast, the bad experience personally. I still do have a lot of knee-jerk reactions where somebody says something and it really hurts because it resonates somewhere I didn't realize, or I have a bad experience. But there are often times now where I'm able to experience something negative that used to scare me and put me off my center for days, weeks, months, years, that now I go, okay, everything happens for me, not to me. I know that. So I might not be able to see it right now, but I can trust, because I do know I trust spirit, that this is happening for me. And in some capacity, this is trying to get me where I want to go faster. So once that becomes a core belief, and, you know, even when somebody you love says something mean to you and you want to just get angry at them and put it all on them, you go, well, wait a second. If I believe in the law of attraction and I set my own magnet and everything in my world is a reflection back to me of what I'm putting out, there's something about I'm putting out that isn't quite what I intended. Let's take a look and see, is there a limiting belief there? Or is there something, you know, that I'm not quite aware of that's bubbling up? And having that awareness and trust and faith of not taking it personally and knowing innately that you are enough and you are good enough allows for that cloud to dissipate and not be so painful, so deeply painful.
In building this trust and relationship with spirit, I'll use your language of spirit, I find it's similar to building trust with anyone or anything else, where it takes time to build that relationship. And like you said earlier, with meditation or being able to delineate the difference between ego reaction and intuition and anxiety, it takes practice to hone that. Do you categorize building that trust similarly, in that it takes time and practice building that trust? And if so, what does practicing trust with the universe look like for you?
Great question, because I was going to say it's different for each of us. Yeah, definitely. And I look forward to my life so much more knowing that I'm awake enough now to do that for the rest of my life. Yes, building that relationship. For me, I'm a writer, so I like to journal. And right now my journaling looks like letters to spirit. I miss letter writing. So I'll just sit down at the end of my day and write, "Dear Spirit," and off I go. And I say, you know, "Thank you," or "What was this?" or "Hey, this happened. How come?" You know, like as I would speak to a best friend. I just kind of lay it all out, and sometimes I get some thoughts back and I'm thinking, but a lot of times it's more just, again, having that the word that comes to mind is surrender, and I usually don't use that word, but having that surrender of thought of being able to ask for help and going, hey, here's what's going on. Can you help? And sometimes you can use the universe as a gift to delegate the little things. You know, that's always one of my favorite signs where I say, hey, I've got a really long to-do list, universe. I need some help. And then like the doctor I was supposed to call calls me. You know, like little things happen. I'm like, yes, sweet, still on the same page. You know, or sometimes it's bigger things, but having that vulnerability to be able to open up to spirit and, like you said, build that relationship and go, hey, I know this is a co-creation. I know that we're in this together. I know you are here for my highest good. I know you are supporting me and I'm never alone. I just have to ask. I know free will trumps everything. So I get to have this choice, but I choose to ask you to do this with me and help me. Here's what I got going on. So
yeah,
that kind of a dialogue. Sometimes I carry a journal around with me everywhere. So it's I talked about earlier about this energetic idea of intentionally changing segments in your day and not just rushing from one thing to the next. That's one way I do it. I'll get out my journal and I'll just write two sentences. Okay, spirit, I'm going to start this. I really would like to finish it 30 minutes and
you know, right.
Or whatever I need help with. That releases my worry, kind of sets it there, keeps the conversation going. And then I close my book and do whatever I need to do.
I love that. I absolutely love that because I think it grounds it so much too, because we're used to having relationships with other human beings and you need to tend to those relationships too. And I think that has gotten harder in today's day and age, and this idea of wanting everything to be convenient and easy, and human beings are anything but convenient and easy.
That's why I love podcast conversations.
Yes, exactly, exactly. But I think the way that you frame that makes it feel very much like you're tending to a relationship like any other, and that means conversations, right? However that looks for you.
Can I add one more
and
thing?
And I think, please, please.
Sorry. Just, we were doing such a beautiful job in this conversation of reminding everyone that we're all unique and do what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to add that to when you have your conversation with spirit or pray or whatever, whichever way works for you, it doesn't have to be to a certain entity. It doesn't have to be to God. If you need protection, it doesn't have to be Archangel Michael that you prayed to or Raphael for healing, physical. They all get the message.
Mm-hmm.
Put the message out and the right angel will come your way.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love that. One thing that my practice has gotten very, very specific to me over the years. And right now I'm in a phase where I very much view all of these different entities as dimensions of myself, similarly to kind of what you were talking about, as we're all connected to the same source. And so eventually I will be reunited with the archangels, the ascendant masters, my ancestors in some sense. But that also means any devious or trickster or malignant energies that cross my path are similarly dimensions of me that are also there to teach me something. And so it's been an interesting shift in how I have that conversation, that it is talking to my wholer self, right? But all that to say, just to underline exactly what you are saying, that everyone conceives of this relationship differently. And it, I think, shifts and changes as well. Like, this has absolutely been a journey for me getting to how I currently think about it. And I know it'll probably change by the next time we sit down and chat and have a conversation. And that's part of the joy of it too, and the exploration. So thank you for underlining that.
I want to add too that you're always connected. You made a comment in that you will be reunited at some point, but you're not disconnected. My kids, when we have these spiritual conversations, one thing that they made me realize is, like, the question is a lot of times, what happens when you sleep and dream? But on the flip side, they've turned that around and they said, oh, so you mean this experience here on earth is basically spirit dreaming? I said, yes, exactly. I didn't put that together. They did. but it helps. So you, like you said, we are spirits having a human experience. You are spirit, and when you wake up, you're this human, but it's almost like this is spirit dreaming. Anyway, that helped me a lot.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. That is such a beautiful image. And also thinking of the way that we use our dreams for healing and processing and, you know, different
and
people
a good
that have different abilities.
Imagination place where you can create good or painful situations.
Right. It's beautiful to think about, like nightmares versus the best dreams, to think about that in this reality that, yeah, I'm going to be chewing on that one. I really like that image.
But it's helpful.
Yeah. Right. Thank you to your kiddos for that one. I want to talk a little bit more specifically about purpose. First, I have a feeling that it's changed a little bit for you, but how would you conceive of the word purpose when you hear it? And what does that mean to you in relationship to this work? But also over the last 5 some odd years of this reckoning during COVID and now being a practitioner that helps other people do this healing work, talk to me about your purpose.
Yes. Well, I believe the purpose of life is joy, full stop. So for any of us, but what brings us each joy is very different. This goes back to life is what we experience, but also the school of love idea that in expanding of what love is and can be and how it can be, following your joy will get you there. Yes, that is definitely different. I don't think I always wanted to help people. But I don't think I ever had a purpose. I was kind of in my conditioning, my upbringing and learning. It was like, you're here to exist, but there wasn't focus on the individual having a purpose. So that's fairly new for me and very joyous. But now again, I've locked onto that idea of being a lighthouse and shining my light. Mm. And that gives other people permission somehow to shine their own lights and it grows and is good, but really reminding myself, you know, and you kind of hear that if you ever read or study like people who help with end of life and you read all the regrets people have, it's usually that they didn't put the value on joy. They didn't take time to have the experience, that they didn't spend the money or spend the time with people that they loved, that they focused on work and all the doing and getting things done and feeling accomplished and this external validation of being good enough instead of just enjoying life or valuing that as well. I make time to the work I get to do for energy brings me a lot of joy. So making sure I do that every day, again, having quality conversations, whether on podcast or with people I love, when usually it's in those moments when I have a decision and I feel like my to-do list is too long. There's probably no way I'm going to get done. Do I push through and try to do it? Or do I take this invitation to go do something that'll probably be open other opportunities, who knows what it'll bring, but that's the point. There's an opportunity for joy. And so I'm learning to say yes more to those, and value joy because I have learned joy is a strategy. If you look at the energy, joy and appreciation are the highest love are the highest vibrations. And so the more energy work you do, the more you kind of raise your energetic minimum. And you operate it from a higher vibration and things flow more easily and come to you more easily and all these wonderful things. So this goes back to the being and the doing. If you can learn, you can learn. When you learn to be at joy and be at love and be at appreciation more regularly, you have raised your vibration and everything else raises with it and is better and more enjoyable and goes faster, it happens with more ease, or you know, all those things we look for. So reminding myself that joy is not just the point but the strategy helps.
The mode of being, right?
The mode of being, yeah, that is the purpose for me, the how, the being.
I love that. I really, really do love that. I was about to go on to my next question. I was like, no, we need to sit with that one for a little bit. That, like, it's not just tapping into being, but it's keeping the mind open, being mindful of the way that we are being, right? Because it gets harder to be. Yeah. It's harder to be upset when you reach that really calm, peaceful space. But also there have been several times where I'm angry or crying on my way home in my car, and I'm aware that I'm upset and that I'm making myself more upset and that I'm working myself up and I need to do these things, but I really just want to be aware of how upset I am. And while sure, you need to feel your feelings and you don't want to, you know, suppress anything that needs to be let out and processed, it's a great reminder to, you know, you always have the option available to you to.
Yes. And you assign the meaning. So if something is upsetting and you've been upset, yes, it's okay to be upset. And like you said, you recognize you're upset and you say, okay, this negative feeling is a sign from my body and my spirit that I'm out of alignment. I'm not going with what I'd like to do and what I want to do. I've made a choice against that. So then you can choose differently. There's always another boat. Like, there's always more opportunity. There's always more things to choose. So for me, it was learning not to beat myself up about my past choice, but to go, hey, okay, I'm getting better at feeling my emotions, listening to them, knowing it's not personal. I'm not bad for having emotions. It's a message. So spirit is energy and emotions are energy in motion. So the emotion is the message, energetic message. Mm-hmm. So learning to appreciate that message that's coming through and then understand it. Yeah, that's a really good thing.
One image I've been thinking about a lot is feelings. When they knock on your door, you should probably answer it and at least say hello, because you don't want to be rude to the feeling, but you don't have to invite them in. You know, it's like we can have a conversation at the door and say, oh, why are you stopping by, and see what they have to say. And sometimes it's important to invite even the scarier emotions in to get to know them. But you don't have to, you know, and I just think it's been helpful for me in thinking about, like, I can engage with them. I mean, it's the very meditation technique of it's the cloud passing through the sky, right?
No, I think can it's notice smart. It. You're inviting them along for the ride. You're acknowledging they exist, but you're not letting them drive. You're still the driver. Yeah, I've had a friend who's taught me a lot about fear, and she says she likes to schedule her freakouts. So if she has gets a lot of anxiety or fear over doing something, she goes, okay, fear, I see you. Monday at 10 o'clock, you have 15 minutes to freak out and I'll see you then. And then she just doesn't think about it. Monday at 10 o'clock, then she lets herself sit in that gross feeling for 15 minutes and she goes and does whatever she needs to do.
I love that.
So I was like, I haven't tried that quite yet, but I was like, that's a really good way of thinking about it. For me, we were talking about, like, relationships, relationship with spirit, relationship with yourself. For me, it was more of feeling like a relationship with whatever the emotion was. So fear for me was a big one, coming up with that relationship and understanding, oh, okay, the same thing you were saying. I don't want you to take over. I see you. How can we work together? How are you a sign of understanding what was happening? Like you said, acknowledging, not ignoring, that doesn't end well, but also not letting it take over.
Yeah. Well, and if all of these emotions, energy in motion, are messages from the energy of spirit, it's another sign that you don't want to miss too. And I love what you said earlier about how, and as hard as this is, instead of shaming yourself for feeling the feeling, and it's like, well, now I feel bad, and I feel it's the meta emotion of I'm angry that I'm upset, you know, and then you start having all of those things. But instead of kind of spiraling about the feeling, letting it exist, gaining the message from it, the sign that it's trying to communicate, right? And then moving forward, I think, is really powerful. And of course, again, to speak to what you so beautifully highlighted earlier, the different ways of doing all of these things, It's very cognitive behavioral therapy too. It's very different skills that I've learned through counseling that help with this, but also thinking about it in a meditative connection to my higher power sense has also been a really helpful, powerful tool in combination as well. You also mentioned when these feelings arise, you know, we get to assign that meaning. We get to decide and make meaning out of these things that happen. And of course, the name of the podcast is Making Meaning. We're all constantly making meaning of everything, everything that we experience in this life. Humans are innately storytellers. We're constantly telling a story about what all of this is. And I think most religions are creation stories about the numinous, and it's a story that we have made up to try and understand this phenomenon that we've kind of been engaging with and around throughout our conversation. When you think of this idea of assigning meaning to things, and of course it's related to this question of purpose, but why do you think it is that we have been put in this position to make meaning of our experience? Earlier, you said that this is a way that spirit wants to expand. Why in this way? Why with us? And why does it matter that it is Kay Margaret and Reese and your kiddos, as opposed to some other type of expansion, pure energetic expansion without individual identities? Why is this meaningful, and how do you make meaning out of this story that spirit is weaving with us?
Really awesome big question. I think, well, it's a co-creation. So spirit could expand by themselves and does. The universe is constantly expanding it, physically itself. But in this instance, it is a co-creation. So although there are these wonderfully infinite possibilities and infinite combinations, each moment itself is unique. There is no moment like there is now that there will be in a second or there was a moment ago. It's constantly something unique and special that has come together. And on top of all that beautiful weaving of the universe, we have free will. We can choose. I'm going to take this path, or no, I'm going to say that, or I'm going to go this way and see what happens. And there are constantly opportunities, but which ones get picked, that's on us. And so then it becomes this co-creation of this woven fabric, but the, like, we're designing it. So I think there's an element there that the universe spirit is not controlling, and that in itself is the edge of creation and exciting. It's also wildly uncomfortable for those of us who are humans. But I think the meaning piece for me comes, it makes sense energetically. One of my favorite, just because it's very easy, is like somebody gave an example once of, oh, if someone made a derogatory comment about people with pink hair, you would kind of brush it off and not maybe listen because you don't have pink hair and you probably don't care. But if it was something you resonated with, you would hear it right away and you'd react right away and you'd place meaning on it. It would have historical meaning or whatever the meaning was to you. You would resonate with that frequency and give it attention. I think once I was able to see things more energetically and the less that they were personal, that everyone's doing the best job that they can, that things can always change, that I don't have to take it personally, but I can take it like we were talking about emotions being a sign. I can take that as a sign that it resonates with something in me that allows me to make, I don't know, I guess more informed choices or grow that much more and hopefully evolve a little bit in this lifetime.
Yeah. Well, and I love thinking about as we each as individuals are evolving in this lifetime, we are also at the edge of the expanding universe, yes, of spirit expanding. I think that is just so magical in every sense of the word.
Right. That's then one of my favorite special, words. Because look at you. You're brave, yeah, enough to do it way out here on the edge.
Right. Exactly. And I just love using the word magic because I think it encapsulates so much, but also it's like, yeah, it just feels so magical to me. Wow. There's so many things that we could keep going into and keep exploring. And it's also fascinating to me. But I do want to be mindful of our time and you having been so generous of your time here with me today. I have a few more questions just to round out our conversation. But first, for everyone listening, if you are interested in working with Kay Margaret, checking out her work, learning more about her podcast, the Intuitive Wisdom Podcast, or anything else, all of those links will be in the description down below, wherever you are listening or watching. Please go support Kay Margaret. All the socials, follow, all of that good stuff. Beyond that, is there anything in light of our conversation? One, is there anything specifically that you would like to plug or promote? And is there anything that you would like to return to, clarify, highlight, underline, or something we didn't get to that we missed that you're like, we really need to touch on this before we close out?
I love your big questions. I think you were talking about loving to nerd out or geek out on the different spiritual tools we use. But I think one thing that's so exciting about spirit is that it gives you that bigger picture perspective. And a lot of the work, energy work and spiritual work we do is so introspective. You know, we're thinking about, how do I understand myself? How do I use my innate gifts? What are my innate gifts? It's so inward that it's really a breath of fresh air to have all these have your questions and this conversation about the grand, you know, how that fits into the whole thing that we are is fascinating. So I quite appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So you're right. And thanks for including the links. I now work mostly on home, so the home frequency reset. I published a book this year called Make Ease Your Vibe that has energy, time, and mindset strategies that go along with all we were talking about. And I've made a free quiz on my website. You can check that out too. That'll start asking, well, it asks questions and you can kind of give yourself a little score and get some more information. But the questions are my favorite because it starts getting you to think about your space having energy and how that relates to you and just bringing that awareness piece in. Because I know although I understood we were all energetic beings, it was fairly new for me to understand that we also have energetic residue and that kind of builds up like dust. And so the benefits of clearing your space and having it support you, I love that.
Yeah, no, that's so powerful. The phrase that just came to mind is like the angelic Marie Kondo, right? Because I remember when that was such a craze, maybe was that around COVID, but everyone was like, wow, and you can really feel the difference in this idea of spark joy. And I remember thinking, it's the energy. Yes. And when things aren't being moved, it gets stagnant and it is the residue. And we all know what it's like when, you know, you've had someone in your home that had a stinky energetic vibe and you get them out and you're like, I need to open the windows. You know, it's like even if you're not necessarily inclined to these tools, we've all experienced that. So that's wonderful. All of those things will be linked down below. Anything else you would like to touch on?
No, I think it's been such a beautiful conversation. I would just say continue to be kind to yourself. You know, I think in recognizing that we all are energy, we also recognize we're all on our own journey and we're all doing the best we can. So there's always more there. So kindness to yourself goes so far. You know, you are enough just as you are in this moment. I think it's really easy to forget that. For me, I always get worried that I'm late, that I haven't learned enough or done enough or seen enough and I'm somehow late. But it's not true. You're exactly where you need to be, whether the situation feels positive or not. It's there for you. Things are happening for you. So no, just keep shining your light. This is wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kay Margaret. My very last question, just to hopefully put a little bit of a bow on our conversation. What is one word to describe how you are feeling right now?
Light.
Light. I love that. Can I ask why?
I love when you spoke earlier of meditation and feelings, and you said you check in to feel where in your body you're feeling them. I don't have that habit. Now I'm going to be thinking about that and work on that. But when you just asked me that question, I did that. I tuned in and I thought, well, what do I feel? And I feel my heart center open and I feel light, lightness, but also bright light.
I absolutely love that. Thank you for sharing your open heart and bright light with us, with me during this conversation, with the collective and the Making Meaning podcast. I cannot thank you enough for your generosity of spirit and time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all so very much for being here today. And a huge thank you to Kay Margaret Solorio for her time, energy, and presence and vulnerability during this episode. It's never lost on me how jarring some of my questions can be. Just to flat out ask someone what happens when we die can be a lot. And so I just always appreciate when guests are so game to go there with me. And I think we really dig into some powerful topics. And Kay Margaret absolutely went there, right? Dived right in with me. And it was just such a joy to be able to connect in this depth of energy with her. Again, if you are interested in Kay Margaret's work and working with Kay Margaret to get in touch with your personal home or explore the energetic space of your physical space, all of those links will be down in the description box down below. Kay Margaret is also an author and her book will be linked down below as well. A huge thank you to Nicole Ostreicher for Making Meaning's art and podcast cover. You can find her on Instagram at Nicole O Creates or Nicole O Design. Thank you to Tristan Morgan for Making Meaning's theme music, and you can find him on Instagram at Tristan Morgan. To stay up to date on all things The Cohere Collective, make sure you subscribe to our newsletter over at thecoherecollective.com for weekly insights to cultivate coherence. And follow us across all social media, all at The Cohere Collective. If you would like to work with me to find and pursue your purpose, you can do so over at www.thecoherecollective.com and click on Coherent Design. Right now, I am feeling energized. This eclipse season, I think, was a lot for all of us. I think the collective energy has been feeling this big transition. I mean, 2025, it's the 9 year. We're closing out cycles, and now we're getting kind of into the last little quarter of the year here, and things are going to keep ramping up. So I'm feeling a lot of energy to keep pushing down this path. Of course, transition inflection points are always difficult and there's grief that comes with change, but coming through on the other side always comes with excitement for the journey ahead. It almost feels like I feel like when you were a little kid and you couldn't sleep the night before a field trip because it almost felt like Christmas the next day, but also a field trip is like not just exciting Christmas vibes, but it's excitement to explore, to try something new, to adventure, to experiment. And that's how I feel right now. I feel like we're the night right before a new vast adventure, and I can barely sleep. Thank you, dear listener, for being here, for making meaning alongside me and with our guests, and for being my favorite part of coherence, of making meaning. And as always, I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.